recorded live from the mats of Radical MMA in New York City, the Martial Culture Podcast, your source for in-depth combat sports and martial arts insights with Coach Rene Dreyfus and Matt Pierce. Ring the bell and let's get it on.
Hi-yo.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good.
Good?
Freezing cold in this room. Well. The air conditioning is very strong here.
Do some push-ups.
I should. I should totally do some. I just came from doing push-ups. Oh.
I did a whole bunch earlier, too. I can't do any more right now.
We should have our own Martial Culture Podcast Physical 100.
Oh, yeah? Just the two of us? You'll win.
Get some of the other podcasts.
Well, I could
people.
Probably do something.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, what could I do? I could hold something.
Yeah, you could probably. Yeah, I mean, you're a strong dude. I mean, honestly, no. I mean, you're a very strong dude. So there's things you could do.
Listen, I have a problem.
Yes.
My wife and I.
The first part is admitting the problem.
There we go. My name is Matt. I'm an alcoholic. my wife and I are we're committing ourselves to being healthy, and I've lost about 50 pounds now.
50.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
But dude.
In about maybe 6 months.
50 pounds. That's great. Yeah. Good for you.
So we do like dumbbell exercises and like follow some YouTube video.
Yeah.
But we started one yesterday and it's only like 20 minutes a day. But it kills my knees.
Yeah.
I gotta get a knee brace or something.
Yeah, actually I would say that's good to have your knee brace first, but also what I understood from my physical therapist is a lot of times when you're doing like kind of squats and you have pain, it's because of a lack of mobility in your ankles. It's something I'm working on as well. Yeah. So when you have tight ankles, you can't squat so well and it can put pressure on your knees or back or things like that. So obviously I'm not a physical therapist, just things that I understood. When you don't have ankle mobility, you can start having knee problems. So you should talk to my physical therapist, Garrett.
All right.
He's amazing. We should actually have him on the show, totally. He's brilliant. You know, I think gives you an issue. Is like there's whatever subject we're talking about, whether we're talking about physical conditioning, whether we're talking about jiu-jitsu, MMA, whatever, there's such a plethora of information out there. But you don't have that information, one, don't understand if it's quality information, but you also don't have that information in the individual context. Mm-hmm. So something could be good. I'll give you an example of what I mean. So take a specific technique from sport jiu-jitsu, and we talk about this a lot, right? So very good technique for, say, gi sport jiu-jitsu. Now, that technique may not be good for MMA, or more specifically, say this is a technique here, but it's you're not a flexible guy, and this technique requires some flexibility. Okay, not for you. Or the other thing, which is more subtle, it's like, what's your game? What's your objective? What are you trying to achieve in your martial art practice, or in this case, physical practice? Mm-hmm. Now, is this the best thing for you to be doing, if given that's your game? So, for example, you know, remember John Will, we had him on the podcast, yeah. And he said there's a lot of things that you could do. The question is not could you, the question is should you. So there's could and should, right? So I think it's very important to understand what your objectives are, what you want to do, what your body type is. Like, okay, so for example, deadlifting 800 pounds is not a bad thing. If you can deadlift 800 pounds, right? You know what I mean? Like, you know, you see a guy on in school, this is how you deadlift, this is how you do this, right? Well, maybe you're not ready for that exercise, right? Mm-hmm. Right. But like I said, more subtly in the martial art era, it's like martial art aspect. Okay, you're a triangle guy. So why are you diving to this move here? Because it doesn't key into your triangle game. It doesn't link to your triangle game. It's kind of a dead end, right? So you have to understand, is the information correct? Number one, is it good information? And then you have to understand, does it fit your particular context, right? Hey, maybe you have bad knees, right? So knee movement is not good for you. So every time I tell my students to look at something online, I say, look it through the filter of, what am I trying to achieve? Is this going to help me achieve it? what are my, in your case, what are my injuries or my limitations? And is this going to turn into an injury or exacerbate some problem I have? Or is it just not for me because I can't do it, right? Or it's dangerous or right. something like that, right? So filtering information, online information, through your own personal lens is extraordinarily important. And of course, the lens of quality, meaning, is this actually good information? You know, it's like, you know, Pizzagate. You know, not good information. You know, QAnon, not good information. Yeah. But then, like I said, there's things that are good out there, but not necessarily for you, right?
Right.
So I just be careful. So I can take a look and give you some tips or something.
Yeah,
like
I hate
that,
knee stuff. It pops every time I bend down.
Well, you're a big dude, so what I would say is
decades of,
you know, but you walk around all day, and what's taking that stress? Your knees take the stress of your body. So I would say, in your daily life, if you start wearing a knee brace a little bit, start strengthening the muscles around the knees, the supporting muscles, and then stay away from things that require, you know, deep squats or something like that to this point without supervision, you know?
Yeah,
but I wear a brace on my knees all the time because of the car accidents I had. And there are certain things, like that's how the rack guard got started. Like, so I was always a fan of clinching guards, like rubber guard and things like that. But rubber guard was very difficult for me because my legs were so injured. Mm-hmm. So I kind of like needed some other clinching guards that were a workaround for me. And rack guard became extraordinarily effective for my game. Obviously, I didn't invent rack guard. It's originally a judo position, but it's a position that I took and expanded out in the no-gi, because originally a gi position, right? And but expanded out no-gi and made it a much more cohesive system. And that system works very well for me. But I also, speaking of which, when I teach it to other people, I adjust what I teach based on what their strengths are. So if you're a triangle guy, I'll say, hey, you could do this. If you're a omoplata guy, hey, they kind of play rack guard this way. If you're like a guillotine guy, hey, play it this way. Now there's some standards, right? Some standards of movement that we should all do. But at the end of the day, there has to be some individuality in your approach, right? Because your body's different from mine, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you're tall and big. I'm short. I have to admit it. I've come to terms with that. I'm like a hobbit. I'm short. And, you know, we were just different, right? Yeah. You know, so you have to adjust that. And I don't care if you're a white belt or black belt. Part of that martial art journey is filtering whatever you are taught through the lens of how can I make this my own, right?
Right. That's smart.
Yeah.
Take that approach to lots of things.
Yeah,
to
anything. Yeah, yeah.
Mm. Interesting. I got to get a knee brace because Brianna likes doing squats.
you know what I would suggest first before you do that is this comes back to the old, like, you ever see those old kung fu guys, the movies, they sit in horse stance and things like that? Well, you know, kung fu has some aspects that are not really, you know, something we want to go. But, you know, saying all of this stuff over there is stupid, boom, I won't even listen, is not true. Sitting into kind of a horse stance position, isometrically holding it for a while, not necessarily squatting deep, but say, hey, how long can I hold this structure? So go to the point where you don't feel pain in your knees. Let's do a little bit of a squat. But then hold it there for like a minute and work up to 90 seconds. That's some really good training. And then it can help develop your stability.
Yeah.
Obviously, I'm not a physical therapist. I don't take that with a grain of salt. Again, filter it. Filter what I say.
Filter.
But isometric training, right? Isometric training, meaning like holding things against a gravity or a resistance. It's a very good way of training. It's a big part of old school Asian martial training. It's something that even top trainers physical understand that it's very effective.
Oh, right? Interesting. Yeah, I can do that. My building has a pool, so maybe walking around the pool.
Well, that's wonderful training. Yeah. You know who does that? George St. Pierre.
There you go.
So he does a huge amount of pool work because it takes away the stress on your joints.
Yeah.
Great, great job. Anyway, I don't mean to interrupt.
Interrupt.
There's something I would really like to talk about because I'm so excited about talking about it. And we mentioned it the last podcast. The ultimate self-defense championship.
Yes.
Did you get a chance to see any of it?
I watched about half of the first episode.
Yes. Pretty cool, right?
Very cool.
Yes. So I think we've talked about Rokas a few times. He's got an individual named Rokas. He lives in, Estonia? Lithuania? One of the
Estonia is not a real country.
Estonia is a real country.
Yes. That doesn't sound real. Isn't that one, the one from that cartoon?
No, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia are...
Those are real countries? There's real, they're, isn't that from Marvel, I thought? All right, Estonia is real.
I'm not sure if he's from Lithuania. There are three countries bordering, were absorbed by the Soviet Union. Yeah. They became the three.
It's near the Gumdrop Forest in Candyland.
No, it's a real country on the Baltic.
I believe you. What are you
talking about? Apologies to all our Estonian listeners.
Oh, yeah, yeah. If you're out there listening in Estonia, send us a message.
Our AOL email educational address. System has failed us once again.
I'm stoned.
You're stoned.
All right. So you live somewhere.
Yes. That's where Stone Cold Steve Austin lives. Oh, wow. There you go.
Well, if he says so, then it must be true.
Get it, Stone Cold. Mm-hmm. I got it. Yes. So just in case you missed it.
I got it. We all got it.
Okay, anyway, so this Rogas, he's in that area, but he's had a podcast for a while. He's a very interesting guy. Started his martial arts journey in Aikido, but found it flawed and not effective for self-defense, which was something he was working on. He eventually started moving towards MMA, tried his hand at MMA, trained a lot of different places, trained with a very famous guy named Matt Thornton, trained a little bit under Conor McGregor's coach, John Kavanaugh. Had some amateur fights, but you know, really was his own journey. He wasn't looking to be a pro or anything like that. But you know, dedicated himself to remodeling himself in a more functional image. But he even said, he's like, you know, MMA is not self-defense. Now, yes, it's probably more oriented towards realism than Aikido. But obviously, you know, when it's one-on-one, no weapons in the cage, you know, this is a very common refrain. Now, I absolutely believe that MMA is the best way to train for one-on-one self-defense or even to train your body. But, I mean, of course, it has some limitations. I mean, we're not doing death matches in the academy, right? So the question is, how do you judge your effectiveness in self-defense if you're not, like, getting attacked on the street all day? And the thing is, this is the issue with all self-defense training. If you're getting into street fights every single day, you are a psychopath. Right?
Like Fight Club.
Yeah, no, I mean, like a street fight. Because even Fight Club's not a street fight. That was
Did you remember the movie where one of their tasks was to go start a fight?
Yeah, but lose. And you remember the guy starts the fight with the priest? Yes, but he starts a fight, then loses, right? But that's also only one fight, right? Like, normally they're fighting, but you can't ever really understand how good you are if you're not actually in that thing, if you're not doing that thing. So it's this conundrum. If you're getting into street fights all the time, you are mentally unstable. Like, there's something wrong with you, right?
Right.
I had this one guy, he wasn't my student, but he was in a place starting, and he's like, Renee, I really got to learn the ground game because, you know, I get into fights every weekend. And I'm like, why do you get into fights every weekend? Like, you know, and he's a big dude. Like, this guy is not, like, getting picked on. I mean, the guy was, like, your size. Mm. He's over 6 foot tall, probably, you know, 260. And I'm like, nobody's coming up to you and picking on you. So, and he was, like, a douchebag bro kind of personality, right? Mm. But I was polite to him, right? But I'm like, he's like, well, I go to the bar and then this and this and this and whatever scenario it was. And I'm like, why don't you stop going to that bar? Why don't you stop? And then, and obviously he was a bit of an instigator as well, right? Mm-hmm. You know, so there's something was wrong with him, and I couldn't stand him. I'm like, don't get into street fights. You're obviously, you know, there's something wrong with you. You're the issue. You're the problem. You know, you have to tell people, like, if this keeps happening, you know, there's some intrinsic element here, right? What's the common denominator, right? So, but the issue is whether whatever martial art you're doing, unless you know, it's not the days of yore where, you know, the brigands would attack you, the highwaymen would attack you all the time when you're traveling in, you know, on the road.
It's relatively safe out there.
Yeah. I mean, it's not, obviously, we're dealing with, there's criminal elements, but you even if you lived in a very, like, for example, Johannesburg right now is, in terms of crime per capita, one of the most dangerous places on the planet, really? Right? Right. Not in terms of death. I mean, I think war zones outpace that. But in terms of crime, but even then, you know, like, it's not like the residents of Johannesburg get into street fights every single day. You know, that's not happening, right? Because, I mean, you walk, get in your car, you drive, you know, we're not interacting with people on the highway. I mean, in ways that are street fighty. I mean, I guess we could, yeah, obviously road rage, but whatever. There's some level of isolation,
right?
And pacification of every society on the planet that isn't in a war zone, where we're not going to get in street fights every day unless we're psychopaths, right? Or, you know, gangbangers. And that's not even a street fight. Gang warfare is not a street fight. That's gang warfare. Mm-hmm. That's different, right? That is a specific type of scenario when the Bloods beat the Crips. That's not self-defense. It's not even a street fight. It's a gang war. The objectives and the way they handle what they decide is winning is very, very different from our concerns, right? It's more akin to territorial disputes of warfare than it is a street fight, right?
Right.
So how do we understand? This is the perennial problem of martial arts. How do we understand when something works? And this is why most martial arts guys get a pass when they put self-defense in their window, and the average, you know, businessman in the suburbia or housewives like, okay, I guess this works, because they've never tested it out, right? We talk about this all the time with Krav Maga, right? Like, people say it worked. Well, how do I know it doesn't work? Well, I guess it worked because I don't actually get into street fights. But we can point to situations where it's not going to work. Yeah. In the academy, right, it would not work. And I can tell you why, because I understand the leverage. But then also I can actually point to data of it not working in real life.
It's like that thing where somebody says, this wards off bear attacks.
Yes.
And it's like, well, how do you know? I've never been attacked by a bear.
Exactly. Right. Right, right, right. And, you know, like, you know, and some, I saw this one video. So this is actually a very interesting video. So of this guy, and he was a kung fu practitioner. Ooh. And you could absolutely tell he was a very good looking, blonde, blue eyed guy. Very, seemed like a nice guy. Actually could tell he completely believed in his kung fu, like, training. Yeah. And he's on the street, and somebody steps up to him, and he tries to de-escalate because he wasn't a douchebag. I've seen the whole video. But the guy, you know, is attacking him, and it's slightly racially motivated. The person attacking him, I think, didn't like that the white person had stepped into the wrong neighborhood, maybe. Something seemed like that. You know, like, obviously there was a racial element, right? Right. Against the white person. So, and so they're getting in a fight, and he gets into this kung fu stance, right? And the street fighter comes after him, and guess what? The kung fu guy drops him like a sack of potatoes. But you could tell the kung fu guy had absolutely no fighting experience, but he had just belief.
Oh, wow.
Right. So that data point would say, well, good work for him, because he had a self-defense. But the guy attacking him, one, was not really a good fighter. Two, there was a size differential. So your own personal experience is really inadequate to make large conclusions, suppositions about what, like, hey, I got into a fight and it worked. Like I told you, there was this guy on Joe Rogan a long time ago, and he's the Aikido guy, and he's like, well, Aikido works for me. And Joe Rogan was really, and I'm not plugging the Joe Rogan podcast here, I'm just saying, I used to listen to it, I don't listen anymore, right? But he said, yeah, I got into this self-defense altercation. And he goes, really? Oh, wow. And Aikido work. He's like, yeah. Well, I was at this wine bar in Napa.
And he just, like, kung fu artist over there?
Yeah, no. And he's like, yes. I mean, you're talking about this very expensive wine bar with very, very, very upper class people. And he's like, yes, this guy put his hand and I grabbed his finger. And I'm like, that's not self-defense, buddy. That's you restraining a untrained yuppie who maybe had a little too much, you know, Beaujolais.
You attack someone.
Yeah, right. I mean, like oh, yeah, it worked. But that's your experience of violence? Well, yes, I think anything could work in that low-level scenario, right? You don't even need any training, right? But so, like I said, your own personal experience is always going to be inadequate. So you have to take a larger statistical sample of what's going on, which is why, you know, in our academy, and I partner up with a lot of other martial art instructors, and we have a database of 8,000 street assaults.
Wow.
And this is what's working, what's not. And then, of course, MMA, what's working in MMA, what's not. But even then, it's very interesting to see outside of the street assaults, let's put something together where you can say, hey, here's my training, my personal training. What's a metric to decide I was doing it? And that's what Rokas wanted to do. So what he did is he talked to this ex-Krav Maga guy who left Krav Maga because he didn't think it was good, created his own school and organization that was dedicated to self-defense, and has an entire compound in Sydney, Australia, dedicated to self-defense. And he created this multi-tiered champ challenge where the participants would have to go through a number of these things and get scored for their dealing of different self-defense situations. And the first one, what was the first one? Which is so cool.
On a bus.
Got attacked by one person and a group of people on a bus.
Yeah.
And very interesting because you're dealing with an incredibly confined quarters.
I like the one guy. He said he was figuring out what his first move was going to be. And he was going to do a kick to the guy's head. And then the bus moved and he lost his balance.
Right, right.
So he couldn't do his, like he planned, even if you know it's going to happen, your plan was derailed because of outside interference. It's such a like microcosm of self-defense.
And let me tell you, a lot of times when you watch, they're getting to this, they've had these practitioners. Let me say, so one was this guy named Icy Mike, who's a kickboxer. That was the guy who's going to do that gig, or was the karate guy? Those karate guys that didn't do that game.
I can't remember.
Yeah. And this guy, Icy Mike, who's a kickboxer, you might know, all these guys are YouTube personalities. So Icy Mike is, he has a lot of self-defense, police officer, self-defense type training and kickboxing and some MMA training, right? There was Sensei Seth, who is a karate black belt and has some sumo experience. And there was Rokas himself, who is an MMA guy, originally Aikido. There was a guy from that Sydney, Australia's branch of self-defense training. And then there was this guy Ramsey Dewey, who's a Sanda competitor in China, and then there was Jeff Chan, who's better known as MMA Shredded, who's a 1FC MMA fighter. And Jeff Chan, by his own admission in the show, had never trained self-defense. He just trained because he wanted to compete in MMA. His only training has been mixed martial art. He's never done defend a knife attack or never this baseball. I've never done any of that, right? So the first one, they get into fights. And when the bus moves, they fall. So they had to account for the bucket seats, the tiny, the in cramped quarters. Now, who did the best in that? Do you remember in the bus? Well, you only saw the half of it. So I'll tell you, Rokas winds up hitting on a rear naked choke, right? And the other, like the guys who have the MMA training were the ones who did best on the bus, even though MMA training never involves fighting on a bus, but they were more adaptable and their techniques were higher percentage and they did well. Obviously, everybody did. It was a very difficult scenario. And there was also guys that tried to do certain things from mixed martial art. You know what you know what worked really well, even though the scores were not giving points for it? And the way they scored it, sometimes it's real. When guys fell on their back between the seats and they started up kicking, that was very effective. Basically, the old school up kick that you see in MMA from day one, that they were in the guard and they're just up kicking to make space. Very, very effective, right? So that was the first challenge and they get some scores. The second one is they had a room and they had these different guys. The first guy, you should see it, but I'll tell you what happened. First guy comes in and just assaults you with, I think the first one was a baseball bat. I think that was the first one, right? I forgot. The second one was a guy wants to mug you. I'm getting the orders mixed up. Like he has a knife and he wants to mug you. The third one was 2-on-1. And the fourth one was just 1-on-1. Or I think the 1-on-1 was where it started, right? 1-on-1, unarmed. Then it was 2-on-1. Then it was baseball bat and knife, right? Or something like that. I forget the order, right? So what do you think happened? If somebody wants to pull the knife on you, right, and wants to mug you, what do you think the smartest decision is?
Run away.
If you can't run away, yes, run away.
Get close.
Get close and control that knife. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. That's what Jeff Chan did, and was mostly successful. Actually, he never even did knife defense, but he's actually pretty successful until the end, and then he messed up and he did get punctured. right? Most of the guys got really punctured, except for the police officer who did okay. He actually got a kick the guy's knife out of his hand, which I would never think was high percentage.
Yeah.
I think he mostly got kind of lucky. But that being said, it is a data point. It is a data point. It's a data point that I'd have to investigate more. But he actually scrambled around and then wound up.
Steven Seagal stuff.
Yeah, wound up getting behind the guy and kicked him. But it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
But you know what was the winning one?
No.
They said, oh, here's my money. And just de-escalate.
Oh, that's so funny. Yeah. That makes total sense.
It's a total sense, right?
Don't fight.
Yeah, right. Don't fight, right? And it was like nobody said you had to fight, right? So a couple of the guys were very smart like that. Wow. But you have to watch it because I'm ruining it. And I want to say I'm giving you the spoilers, but I really recommend everybody watch it, even with my spoilers.
It's on YouTube.
It's on YouTube, yeah. Right? It's on Martial Arts Journey. It's Rokas Leavetskis's podcast. But if you go Martial Arts Journey, Martial Arts Journey, it'll come right up, and we'll put a link in the show notes too.
That's so cool.
So they go through other challenge. The next challenge they had, and then people found that 2-on-1 exhausting. The interesting thing, all these people from all these different martial arts, generally speaking, did very badly. So I'll give you that. Then they had this one. They had a funny one where the zombie survival that was more fun. The zombie survival apocalypse. They had one that was more jokey. And then they had another one. So name some self-defense scenarios. I want to tell some self-defense scenarios. Give me any self-defense. Make one up.
Make one
up. And not just for you, but for any individual. So tell me who the quote-unquote victim will be or the target will be and who's the assailant and what's the situation.
Wow. I'm in line at McDonald's ordering my McDouble.
No, because you're trying to lose weight.
So. Yeah, I'm ordering a garden salad with garden salad, dressing that's right. on the side. And there's a homeless guy comes in. He's kind of yelling, asking for money, and attacks me from behind.
You know, I've actually seen a video almost exactly. It wasn't McDonald's, but it was like KFC or something, right? I've actually seen that. Okay, good. That's one situation. And is he armed or unarmed?
Unarmed.
Okay, maybe another situation, not with you.
Not with me. You're a teacher in school. And one of your students is acting out, and you're disciplining them. They're not liking it, and they're getting heated.
Male teacher, female teacher?
Female teacher. Male yeah. student.
And then the male is emotionally disturbed, maybe something like that, and yeah. Starts hitting. I've actually seen that. Actually, it was a male teacher, older male teacher, and I saw the student beat the teacher to within an inch of his life. It's a horrible video. Wow. And he's acting out, and the teacher tries to calm him down, and the teacher was like 60 years old. It was terrible. It was terrible, right? I've actually seen that. Okay, now give me another last one. Give me one more. And you're still doing one-on-ones, though. Notice that. And unarmed. Yeah. One-on-ones and unarmed, right? Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that.
Walking home from the bar, 2 o'clock in the morning.
Are you inebriated?
Yes.
I didn't know you were going to say yes.
Of course you are. And not paying attention to your surroundings, looking like a good victim, and a group is coming towards you, looking for trouble.
I have a video of this, of a female surrounded by a group of assailants, and I don't want to get too into it, but it's horrible. Yeah. Horrible to watch, and it's horrible to watch. Like, they just leave her there half her dead. Right, it's awful, right? Yeah, mm-hmm. And then, or it could be a male, and it becomes a gangbang beatdown, or it could go even sexual too. Like, you never know, you never know. I've seen some videos of, you know, that kind of violence going sexual too, right? In prisons, right? So yes, multiple opponents, unarmed and armed. I'll give you another situation. Notice. Everything was like late at night, or you're interacting with someone you don't know. Let me tell you, most violence, particularly domestic violence, is from people you know, mm-hmm. right? And one of the most common things, and this is so smart, they had different scenarios. So smart. One of the scenarios was a guy is called into the office of his boss, and the boss starts sexually harassing him, asking for sexual, you know, favors. That's self-defense.
Sure.
Now, obviously, because the participants were guys, it was a female and they were heterosexual, right? It was a female boss and there, and then, but it could easily be obviously the other way, which is obviously with Harvey Weinstein's all around, very common. In this test, they do that. They have all these differences. They have another one where they're on a date with a girl, and the girl is a little too aggressive. Like, once someone bumps into her, and instead of allowing him to de-escalate the situation because it was like a blind date or something, the girl's like, "My boyfriend's a fighter," and he'll and she start escalating, and it revs up the other person. So really, the problem was your date. And concepts of toxic masculinity, like, you know, these old school, like, my honor is this and you're not going to defend, like, these kind of like old school values that are not healthy. I'm not old, some old school values are, but this kind of toxic, like, you know, I have to defend this because, you know, this, like, we can't just, you know, say, excuse me, I'm sorry. And, you know, like very toxic kind of masculinity, but internalized by the date. Not yourself,
right?
And how he's making the situation. Then another one was kind of like a active shooter, so you had to hide from an active shooter. Obviously, terrible thing, but very relevant. And you had to escape, right, an area without being, you know, killed. They didn't have guns, but the idea was to hide from people who wanted to hurt you. Obviously, it was, you know, kind of going an active shooter, but they didn't want to, I don't think they wanted to bring in firearms into this discussion, you know, because obviously Australia, first of all, the firearm issue laws is what they are, and how would you defend against
you can't
them,
monetize that video either,
yeah, right. But so they had all these different challenges. Now each person was awarded a challenge. Now the interesting thing is nobody did really well. Everybody, and you know what, the guys who had the quote-unquote self-defense training, so the another one, they had an enclosed space, like you're in a couch, and you had to basically fight a guy. That was the very last one. And also you had a knife attack that the guy is not backing off. Like, you had to defend the knife attack. And you saw all these guys who had knife defense training got skewered like freaking shish kebab.
Wow.
And the person who did the best, who do you think did the best in the knives? And they all got skewered. But who do you think did the best?
I don't even know what I could say.
The guy who had no knife defense training, MMA shredded, and Rokas. And it's funny because this is something I talk about a lot. We tend to think that Aikido and Japanese Jiu-Jitsu are useless because we have something more dominant, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, that has replaced it and shown that Japanese Jiu-Jitsu is kind of useless. That's kind of the narrative that people say right now. And I was actually talking about this to Burton Richardson, just chatting with him, who we've had on the show. Japanese Jiu-Jitsu, one, doesn't really go for chokes as much as arm bars, right? Why do you think that is?
Big upper bodies, super strong, shredded arms. No, I can't figure out your mimes. Armor. You can't get away with the armor, man.
Yes. When someone's wearing armor, very good. I mean, we should not ever play charades. Right. When someone's wearing armor, it's extraordinarily difficult to choke them.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
They have pieces of metal around their neck. Like, it's very hard to choke people with armor. Sure. Especially if you ever see Japanese armor, the helmets.
The samurai ones?
Yeah.
Yeah, they got the big flails.
They're flared out quite a bit, right? And they wear a lot of stuff underneath, right? So you don't see, what do you see? You see arm bars. You see joint locks, much, much more. If you look at Aikido is all pretty much arm manipulation. Now, so the rule of Jiu-Jitsu is positional dominance, side control, mount, back, right? We've talked about this, right? It's our very first lesson. But do you think you should take someone's back when they have a knife? So let's play it out. Grab a pen.
I don't have a pen.
All right, grab. Yeah, okay, good. So I'm going to take your back. We're going to pretend you're stabbing me.
Okay.
And I'm going to take your back. Okay, so we'll move these mic around because I know these are like $5,000, these mics. Okay. So I'm going to take your back. All right, I'm going to try to choke you out. Now, what are you doing with your knife?
I'm stabbing you.
Yeah, now you just stabbed me. You stabbed me in the kidney and the lung
there you go.
Three dead. Times, and that's bad, right? Yeah. So one of the rules that Burton Richardson, we had on this, and he spoke about it on our last podcast, we had him on, which is, I think, a couple years ago. Burton Richardson, you guys should check it out. But he says, don't take the back, control the weapon first. And this is one of the reasons why Japanese jiu-jitsu is the way it is, because a lot of Japanese jiu-jitsu is understanding that the guy pulled out, okay, maybe he lost his katana, but he pulled out his tanto. Tanto is the small knife, or his wakizashi. You're still dealing with the knife opponent. So everything is about arm control, weapon control, and then we're trying to dominate the weapon, which is why Aikido is completely useless in MMA, because there's no knife. But that being said, the Aikido training paradigm, I train in Aikido Jiu-Jitsu, but their training paradigms are not functional. Traditional training patterns, they're not good. They don't develop toughness or any of these things. So I still believe that the training paradigms of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and MMA are superior. But that being said, the technical approach of what they're trying to achieve has some merit. Don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. There's some merit there. And you can see Rokas, actually, because he's an Aikido guy, being somewhat functional. His understanding of body movement from MMA and from other things helped him get speed and agility and things like that. But then he's like, oh, let me try to manipulate the arm. That being said, he still failed, and I believe he got stabbed out too, right? He basically, everybody in the knife defense, including the guy who had a massive amount of certifications in knife defense, got skewered like shish kebab. And the thing is, we have a lot of false confidence in quote-unquote self-defense training. But if you're not doing it, so what Icy Mike was trying to do is actually, I saw the video, he tries to control the arm, which was very good, but then he makes a very big tactical error, and the guy switches the weapon. Again, another thing that Burton Richardson, talks about, he switches the hands and then he gets skewered. If you're not, I guarantee you, Icy Mike, and I followed him, he has a YouTube channel, great guy. I don't know personally, but some good content there. Don't always agree with what he says. But majority of his training, day in, day out, is kickboxing. He's a kickboxing guy, right? And he talks about, like, his channel, Hard to Hurt, talks about self-defense, but pretty sure that most of his training, day in, day out, most of his sparring rounds are kickboxing rounds. And he's a pretty good kickboxer, pretty good, right? If you're not day-to-day doing a thing, you're not going to get really good at that thing. You need to know how to defend a knife, and you need to practice it. You're not practicing something, you're not going to just pull it out of your head, right? So he kind of did the right thing in the beginning, but he didn't have the rounds. He didn't have the reps. He didn't have the time in, and he gets skewered. So it's very interesting that in almost all these situations, the guys with the least amount of quote-unquote self-defense training did very well. And who do you think won? Now, spoilers, you don't want to know. Tune out.
Well, I don't want to know.
Yeah. Oh, you don't want to know? No, that's okay. Okay, well, you should watch it.
I will. But right. Who do I think
and
won?
The very final match is a down, dragged out, 20-second all-out brawl, self-defense brawl, in an enclosed space with couches and chairs, like in a room, like this, just like we're sitting. And there's a lot of furniture, and suddenly you can't move around like, I mean, they degenerated to grappling. Oh, like, that's another thing. Almost every single engagement in every single test, regardless of the scenario, became grappling in like 5 seconds. Oh. Or had some grappling. Sometimes they disengage, but grapple, like, dude, you want to know how to defend yourself, you must know how to upper body grapple. I mean, like, everything I've been saying about martial arts is really just proven in this show. But that's pretty good. Great data points. And there's some things I learned from it too. But one, every single engagement without fail entered grappling range, regardless, baseball bat, knife, all out punching, kicking, fighting on the bus, running away from the active shooter, and they're trying to get you. Obviously that didn't involve a gun, but they were trying to catch him and things like that. Every single engagement involves some grappling and or grappling to escape, except for the sexual harassment one. That one was more verbal, right? Obviously, yeah. And the psychological one of the toxic masculinity one, that was also a little bit more like, calm your girlfriend down and then de-escalate, right? That was more verbal. But other than those two, which were more like verbal and social, when there was any type of physical interaction, they grapple, number one. Now, let me think who he won. So we have the karate guy. You have Rokas, the MMA guy. You have who he was picked to do the worst. You have the self-defense guy. And I'm going to talk about him in a second. You have the Sanda guy. You have, and you have Jeff Chan. And you have the self-defense, hard-to-hurt kickboxer. So you have the kickboxer who has the most self-defense training, the MMA guy with no self-defense training, Rokas, who's some MMA training, and Sensei Seth, who had karate and a little bit of self-defense-y type stuff, but not much. And then, but the biggest of the biggest of the batch, Ramsey, who had the Sanda and some Chinese martial art training. And then you had the super self-defense guy.
I bet the MMA guy.
So, yeah, okay. So who did the worst? Who did absolute the worst?
Self-defense guy.
Yes, he did. Because he dropped out. Oh. He had a family issue. He had dropped out. But I'll tell you, it's very, very... There's one instance that happens. And I think he dropped out. But he was not doing well either in the beginning of that. He was doing very badly. Him and Ramsey Dewey were not doing well. And Ramsey Dewey has a whole kind of excuse video of why... And I try to get negative. Sorry. Let me rephrase it. And a whole video of why he felt... He didn't do as well, and he got injured actually in one of the challenges. But even before that, he was doing very poorly. Especially if you watch the bus attack, he does extraordinarily poorly. The self defense guy did the worst. And there's this situation where it's a fight, and he's on top of his assailant, no weapon. It was one on one fight, but he's on top of his assailant, pinning him on top. Okay? And he taps out. It's crazy, right? Why do you think he taps out? He's not being put in any submission or anything like that. Nothing. He is on top pinning the guy.
I can't think of a reason.
The intensity of the situation made him, and they're wearing these protective helmets, which made it worse, but the intensity of the situation made him hyperventilate.
So you got overwhelmed.
Like, and that's what self-defense is. Now, if you are not used to grappling, you don't understand how intimidating someone's body weight on top of you is, because he was pinned for a bit and then got out, right? But pushing it, and you blow all your cardio and all your mental cartilage load, and you're like, whoa, it is crazy. And I've seen people hyperventilate over and over and over again and tap out from just hyperventilating because they're not used to someone sitting on their chest, not even punching them. The stress of a real life encounter, and this wasn't even real life, but the stress of this kind of simulated encounter, because it was so intense, made him exhausted, hyperventilating. He taps out. When he's on top, where he should never, he was not in any danger, but he just, his mind broke. And this is not to criticize him. I've broken. I'm telling you guys, there are times where I have broken. I was in no danger, but I mentally broke. And that has happened to me multiple times in training, in the gym, over and over again. But then your resistance gets higher. It's like exposure therapy. You can deal with this. Then you go here, a little higher, a little higher, a little higher. And I don't break anymore. The other day I was sparring, and I was like, you know, my knees really bother me. They're not doing well now. And one of my fighters put me in this really tough situation, and I felt my neck kind of crank out. And I'm like, yep, this is getting close to that panic moment, because this is really agony right now. I mean, it's like someone is stabbing me with a machete right through my knee, and also twisting my neck the wrong way and cranking on my arm at the same time. I'm like,
and that's close.
Yeah, and this
for anybody
is
else,
this is suck.
That's past
this is
the suck. Line.
So what did I do? First thing, like Dr. Branich, Velissa Branich said, breathe, relax, breathe, calm down. Figure out the situation, and then I got out. It took me a while, and it was really, really hard, but I did. Yeah. And I was very proud of myself, because I was this close to breaking, but I didn't. I was close. I was close. But because I've been there so many times before, I could chill and figure it out and get through the pain, and I just blocked it off and moved. And I'm not a Superman. Don't think, oh, he's so awesome. Anybody can do this. Everybody does it. Because you train every day. And I've seen my students do it. Everybody does it. And you're every day getting further and further in that role, life of a fighter and that role of a martial artist, and your grit level, their resiliency, their toughness gets hard. And in Portuguese, they call casca grossa. That's like what they say in Brazil, casca grossa. It means thick skin, right? And when you're a casca grossa, it means you train so much that, yeah, nobody can rattle you. And you know what else the Japanese have? The fudoshin is another word in Japanese. That's the Japanese way of saying it, where like you're unshakable, right? Just means resilience. These different cultures saying the same thing in different ways, in their own unique ways. Right. But basically, man, you got to go through the fire to burn away your weakness. You have to. You have to go through it. Otherwise, you'll break. You will break. Mm. You will break into little bitty pieces, unless you go through the fire on a daily basis. And it's true. And most people don't want to go through the fire. And let me tell you, I was talking to a student today who had done some Krav Maga. Like, dude, it's Krav Maga is way more fun, way more enjoyable for average housewife than what I do in my academy. Like, if these housewives come in and they're like, this sucks. This guy's lying on top of me and pinning me to the floor. Well, yeah, that's what it's going to be like if somebody rapes you. Well, I don't want to do this because it's not fun. Well, okay, it's not fun, but obviously you need this, right? If that's why you're here, right? Which is why Krav Maga schools are packed and ours are not, right? It's like, you know, but it's okay. Like, some people, whatever, anyway. But the guy who did the worst was Ramsey. Well, they'll give him credit because he got injured halfway through. But he and then the self-defense guy. Both of those guys did very, very poorly. Chinese trained martial artist although he had some MMA experience, but he's not that skilled. Pure self defense guy did not do that well. Then the hard to hurt guy, who also had self defense training, did not do that well. And in the final thing, the guy who did one of the best was the biggest guy, Sensei Seth. He's 240 pounds, and he did well, but that was a little bit more because he was the biggest guy in the competition, right? I think he even said that, right? Size does matter. Size matters if you don't know how to deal with it. But then you had Jeff Chan and Rokas, these guys fighting him, and they were able to offset that size with superior understanding of human geometry, of understanding, hey, where's the size? What angle is it coming out of me? How can I deflect it? How can I do it? And guess what? Guess what? You know what the final move was where Jeff Chan, who is the winner, took out the hard-to-hurt guy in that room, that like gauntlet 20-second all-out fight? He took him out with the same armbar that Ronda Rousey does, what's called the Yatskevich armbar, a rolling armbar. And it was really cool to see, okay, this armbar is quote-unquote a judo and MMA, whatever, grappling armbar. But he used it to offset his angle because he was pushed up against the couch and they're all over running the couch and falling over, and he uses the spin of the arm bar to get from a bad position to a good position and finish the arm. So he turned his body to hit it, and I'm like, whoa, that is a beautiful example of taking the tools you know, but because you're so adaptive, making them work in that situation. The guy with no self-defense training did the best in the self-defense, all the overall, the function. And it, like I always say, the best thing is to have a tool set of things you can do to be the most adaptive person, to be adjustable to that scenario. You have to be a little bit of a Swiss Army knife, but with a strong foundation in upper body controls, meaning upper body grappling. And that proved itself over and over again. And have some toughness and resiliency to get through these high-stress moments. That being said, the more you train a specific scenario to get it. So use MMA as a base, but like in our academy, we integrate for the senior students a lot of like live bladed grappling sparring and bladed baseball bat sparring. I mean, grappling with a baseball bat, right? Like, it's actually a wiffle ball bat, but still, you know, we're training these paradigms so that they're not unfamiliar. The more familiar with it, the better you can be.
Wow. That's exciting.
Exciting, yeah. And now, guys, so they're trying to do a crowdfunder for season two. And in the show notes, we'll put them in. If you guys, I'm going to donate because I think it's really worth to have a season two. They're going to be inviting a Shaolin monk I think they're trying to get a Krav Maga guy or something right in there. And Jeff Chan's coming back to defend his title again. So it's very interesting, but Roka's trying to get a crowdsourcing to make it happen because that's very expensive. So I'm going to donate. I recommend all our listeners chip in a little bit too.
But I think also it's fantastic. Write in that they want Renee on the show.
That would be amazing. I would love to do it. Oh, I would so love to do it.
Yeah, but
after I get my after I'm not a big name, but whatever. Yeah. But thank you. After my knee surgery would be amazing.
Yeah.
If I could get it. But it would be really cool.
Cool.
Yeah.
Next week I'm gonna have somebody hide behind that bench and attack you halfway through the show.
Sure.
We'll record video for that one. Just kidding. Nobody's gonna do that.
Anyway, also a shout out to our sponsors, Warlocker. So we have big news. My fighter is fighting for his title in a couple weeks. So June 17th, my fighter is going to be fighting for his first
MMA
title. Yeah, 5-0. Well, officially we are 4-1 because we got disqualified because I had an argument with the referee about raps and this and that. And I don't know.
No, you're kind of hot-headed, so.
Am I hot-headed? I try not to be. I try not to be hot-headed. I can be. I have a temper, but I try to keep it down. I didn't lose my temper though. I kept it really chill.
And that's the situation.
But he was not the person I was. One of the people I knew started cursing at me and being not really cool. But I kept it very chill. And then he kept getting progressively angry. And then the other person said, "You didn't sign the sign. I'm the guy. This and that." And then he disqualified us, which was. I thought kind of uncalled for, but we won the fight, so it didn't matter. Right? We know we won.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when's that? That's
the in a week and a half. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. And my other fight is making his MMA debut, so it's going to be nice, really nice night of fights, so I'm really excited. I'm also excited we have another guest coming on the show. One of friends from the Jiu-Jitsu world on how to learn martial arts better and faster, particularly from Jiu-Jitsu element, and his name is Jordan Hicks, and he's amazing, and he wrote a book. And we're going to have him on as well.
Right? Very cool.
Yeah. And that's about it, right?
That's it.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
Me too.
Thanks for sharing. Check the show notes for all the links to everything we talked about today. And go watch it.
Yes. Go watch it and support Rokas in his self-tent. Yeah.
Send him emails. Write comments on the videos. You want Coach Renee at the next season 2. Thanks.
All right.
Right.
And Matt, you should come in too.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Yeah. I'll be right there. Real steel.
Thanks for listening. Follow us on Twitter at @Marshall_culture and on Instagram at @MarshallCultureCast. Please leave a review on iTunes, and we'll see you next time on the Marshall Culture Podcast.